The following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now it's True Wealth, presented by Little John Financial Services. Here is David Littlejohn with True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, it is that time of the week. It's the best Tuesday you've had all week long, and we're stoked to be joining you. This is Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
And you are listening to the True Wealth Radio Show. Well, Matt, all I can say is, what a brutal day for the stock market.
Ouch.
Right? We have had a fantastic run in the month of September. If I am...
And historically, September is kind of a tough month, right?
It is, right? Yeah. So we started, though. The first day was a Thursday. The markets were up. Friday, they fell. Monday, they fell to what appeared to be the trough of the week. So the low watermark was 3886.75 on the S&P 500 before reaching a high watermark yesterday, intraday, of 4119.28.
Yeah, a day or two ago, things actually
fell. No, that was yesterday's intraday high.
Right.
Right. Markets closed yesterday at 4110. The high was 4119 and some change. And today, we finish at 3932.69, which the low of the day was 3921.28. So it did manage to rally 11 whole points
from the lows,
from the very, very lows. But now, the question is this a calamitous, horrifying event where we all need to panic? Is there any silver lining to this? And the answer is maybe.
Ooh, the spin of positivity.
Right? Maybe. But then again, we won't see it. What's really interesting to me, now, all of you listening, I don't expect you to really follow along with this, but one of the things that we analyze in the host of other data is some quantitative data. Now remember, quantitative is the study of price and volume. Okay, so how many people are buying something, at what price point, and in how aggressive a fashion?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Was the volume low or high today?
I did not pay attention to that. Okay. I don't even have that in front of me right now. But what I can tell you is that we saw several key points in the market where we didn't fall below some key lines in the sand today.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, and this is a really interesting one, but the market does care. Markets like to watch moving averages. One of their favorites is a lot of people like the 40-day moving average or 40-week moving average, but also 50, 100, and 200. Okay, the 50-day moving average, if you look at where it went, the low point in the last 6 months happened on July 22nd, 3919.05. Okay, so the low today is 3921.28. So still, there were two more points. It got way down to that, but it didn't actually dip under.
It went down and tested it, is what you're saying.
It tested, but it didn't fail. Now, today was a beat down kind of test, right? When you talk points and percentages, and I like percentages more, but points, S&P fell over 177 points. The Dow fell over 1,200 points today. And the NASDAQ fell over 600 points today. But let's put that in perspective, because points are for people that don't pay attention,
mm-hmm.
right? Because points are for, if you've been watching the market for 30 years and you've never adjusted, right? This is you thinking that a gallon of gas should still cost 61 cents, right?
Right.
And you're going, man, gas is expensive. I remember when it was 60 cents. And anybody that was born in the last 20 years is doing a facepalm going, it's never been 60 cents. What are you talking about?
Right.
Right? So it's all a matter of time and perspective. Well, in actual percentages, the S&P 500 fell 4.32% today. That's more than 4% in one day, which this officially ranks it as one of the worst days I have ever seen in my career.
Is it really?
Yeah. Over 4% is a damaging day in the market, in my opinion. Now, is consider that that by itself is 20% of the way to a bear market if you were at all-time highs. One day move and you're 20% of the way into a formal bear market.
Yeah. I mean, perspective-wise, that's good perspective.
Okay. It gets more interesting. The Dow was the performer of the group. It only fell 3.94%.
But yeah, wow.
But the NASDAQ fell by 5.16%. And I'm not trying to be alarmist here when I say this. And I'm truly not. But I am telling you that when I see a 5% move in the NASDAQ, that is reminiscent of the days that I remember in 1999,
crossing into
2000, when the dot-com bubble burst and things just collapsed. The question is, what has caused this? Mm-hmm. Okay, what was the trigger point today that got the markets into such a tissy fit?
I think part of it was the news that the Fed might actually be stepping up with more rate hikes and larger rate hikes than some had hoped, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, basically, inflation came in really hot.
Yeah, I think it was right? At 8.3%.
Yeah, 8.3. I think that's correct. And so when that happens, it's like,
hey, it's not working. Our attempts to slow this thing down aren't working.
Yeah, that inflation level is way too high. It's four times higher
than what
than what the Fed's mandate is.
Right.
Right.
And they've been trying to fix this all year.
Yeah.
And it's not working.
Yeah. And so we saw just a shellacking and a risk off trade. Okay. And if you want a real perspective on this, so the NASDAQ's down a little over 5%, Dow's over 4%. I'm sorry, the Dow's almost 4% and the S&P's over 4%. Bitcoin lost 9.87% today.
Wow.
Okay. So Bitcoin now, it was down to the 18,000 range last week.
And I can remember
it's
trading
at
20,200.
So it's still above that. But it had peaked. It had recovered in. So let's just look at the last 1 month. The last 1 month, it had been as high as 24,300 and some change. It dipped to as low as 18,800. And then it had just spiked back up to 22,400 yesterday. And now it's back down to 21,900. So big, big swings. It lost over $4,000. Or in the last month, it's down almost 17% in the last month. But just today, it was down over $2,200, almost 10%.
So that is a painful day for the crypto family.
It is a super wild ride for crypto. And it sort of begs the question of, you know, what's going on and why do we see these major swings? Like, why did gold drop today?
Yeah, this was one of those days where nothing was off the table, right? Like, everything took it.
Right? The euro versus the dollar right now.
That's another one that's really interesting to me, to see the euro and the dollar finally at parity.
Well, and not quite. Euro's 99.71.
Okay.
So, I mean, right this second. It crawled up a little. It's still trading in real time, right? What I can tell you is the Fed is over a barrel. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean,
they're out of options.
There is a real problem here where when you have a runaway inflation and the job market is like you're not taming it,
mm-hmm.
right? And the great resignation means there's this massive loss of workers in the marketplace.
And so wage inflation just continues.
So wage inflation is, and if you don't believe it's real, go look at what fast food employees are getting paid now.
It's insane.
3 years ago, people were saying, we need a living wage. We need people to make $17 an hour. And now people are making $17 an hour. And everybody's going, it's not going to work. It's not enough. It's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
Look at inflation. It's not enough. And this is where guys like me do a facepalm and refer to last show when we go, you might be an idiot if you don't know how the inflation cycle works.
Right.
Because we tell you this, and then people go, nah, rah, 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 politics.
Yeah, they don't want to hear it. They're just like, I just want the money.
And
give
I'm
me
like,
the money.
Rah, 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 politics, reality. Okay, this we're in reality land right now.
Yeah.
So the Fed's stuck, okay? And I don't really want to spend this whole show talking about why the Fed is stuck. Let's just kind of sum it up this way. Fed is stuck because in this environment, they have to raise rates.
Mm-hmm.
But raising rates when you've had it takes leverage out of the system.
Right.
Okay. It means there are fewer dollars in circulation to chase goods and services. And so that is deflationary pressure wise, but it's not working.
That's right? The problem.
The problem is we broke things by writing stupid big checks.
And we just wrote another one
indiscriminately.
And we're doing it again.
Right. And so this is not a question of it's an equal opportunity to throw everybody under the bus event. You know, if your business got a PPP loan when you didn't really need it, but you took it anyway. All right, that you're part of the challenge, right? You got student loan forgiveness. All right, you're part of the gig. Okay, like every end of the spectrum, everybody.
Yeah.
Was
did
just
you get a stimulus check?
Money, mana from heaven. Okay. Mm-hmm. It wasn't. It doesn't work that way. That's called debt monetization, right?
This thought
we're
process that you can just
printing
have it
money.
All. Yeah.
It doesn't conjure new value. It just waters the value of everything down. Okay, and so that's where we're at on this one. Is it's like, hey, your fruit juice tastes watery now because we just diluted it.
Mm-hmm.
So
and we're charging you more for it.
Yeah. Or we're charging you the same, but you're getting less juice, right? Now you have more water, less juice. So that's the issue. That's what we did to the economy. It really is that simple and straightforward. Now, the knock-on ramifications are very complex. But the Fed is stuck. And every time they have to raise interest rates, that is taking more money out of the system, and it's coming from everywhere, including the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Stock market is trying to anticipate when the Fed can be done. They're trying to price this in. And what today was, pardon me for being a little crass on the program, but this was the equivalent of economic data giving a middle finger to investors and saying nanner nanner. Right? I mean, they're saying what you are doing isn't working.
Mm-hmm.
The Fed is going to be forced to raise rates to try to tame this thing. You can try to tap dance around it and, you know, manipulate the data or say why the data is not saying what it says it's saying. But we all know in reality that, yes, gas prices have dropped, but other material things in our world have certainly not.
Mm-hmm.
And so the squeeze is still on, and we have to do something about it. So the market basically learned today what we thought was happening, that inflation was abating, that we were maybe going to engineer a soft landing. Probability of that just dropped. And the market said, well, how much? And the answer is between 4 and 5%.
It seems like the market's living on some extremes, because there was some good news there for a little bit where it seemed like the Fed might be kind of easing up, right? And then we had that big run up to 4,300. Like it happened, and then the tides change and boom, we have another big reaction.
And
it's a roller coaster.
It will continue to be a guessing game.
Yep.
I'm convinced that the guessing game, I mean, there are those out there that are calling for some pretty radical stuff, right? I mean, I've heard everything from political coup to, next pandemic or, air quotes, plandemic, to just actually we're turning the corner and this is the perfect time and you need to be pushing your chips on the table right now. They are all out there and available, all of them, okay? So anyway, if you're wondering as an investor what to do, I have only one simple thing to offer you if you're an investor.
Just one thing. But I'm gonna guess that I don't get to know what it is until you take this obscene profit break.
Okay. Matt will set up the teaser.
Okay.
It's that simple. I promise it's really simple, and you're gonna do a facepalm, but I'm not gonna tell you until we get back. So we'll take a break. Stick around. We'll be right back. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth. News Radio 93.9 FM at 1240 KQEA.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
Okay, if you're just getting caught up, grab the podcast and you can listen to the backstory to understand what we're answering right now. And that's available at our website at littlejohnfs.com. Also, now you can start to track our blog.
Mm. Okay,
so it's officially live and up there. And if you want to track some of the investment analysis that we do, right? Not recommendations, just kind of a look at what's going on here. The wacky one is published yesterday and actually had some support levels that indicated that the market may run down to almost exactly where it is today.
You just didn't expect it to happen in a day.
I actually didn't think it would happen at all. I thought that the market was going to grind higher and was going to test 4150 this week. And instead, we're testing the opposite. We're down at 3932. So 177.72 points lower for the S&P 500, to which I say, meh, right? That's my technical term for that. Don't like it. But at the break, I promised our listeners I wanted to offer one piece of advice for how to navigate a market like this, okay?
Give me your one piece of advice, David. Right? Just throw it down.
I have to be sort of careful about the way I frame this because how you take this
could be misconstrued as investment
advice. So this is going to be, when I say this is not advice that I want you to go trade on, this is advice I want you to implement to improve your analysis. And that is be patient. Right? I know this is rocket science here, but we're in the middle of a game where you have to make some decisions. Are you investing or trading? Okay. Unfortunately, in my opinion, you're going to find a lot of people that are out there, and where I see it a lot right now is in the YouTube landscape, where everybody is out there peddling their opinion, no different than what I'm doing right here. Okay. So let me give you like a kind of a recipe for what to pay for. First, listen to what they're saying. Then second, cross-reference it with what they're selling.
Boom.
Okay? So you can do that with me right now. Listen to what I'm saying to you as we offer advice. And then let me tell you the simple formula. Okay? I say this on the radio all the time. If you can do it yourself, do it. If you can't do it yourself or won't do it yourself, two different things, right? Then seek professional assistance when it comes to your investments and financial management. I don't care if you're coming to us or somebody else, but find somebody competent, qualified, and that you trust so that you can work with them. And make sure that they'll follow through, right? There are a lot of really friendly practitioners that don't necessarily follow through that well. So you need to be aware. So what is the question? Like, what are we selling? We're selling our investment advisory services. We invest professionally for people. We help with financial planning and strategy. We attempt to reduce the amount you pay in taxes and to keep more money in your pocket. We try to lower volatility. We try to be responsive to what financial strategy is appropriate for you as an individual because you are unique from our other investors. Doesn't mean that everything we do is unique for you and nobody else gets what we do. We do share in the intellectual capital, right? So if we're investing for one person and it's applicable to lots of people, they all get the benefit of the research at the same time. But we work on a case-by-case basis with people to custom fit to their need. And that's really what we peddle. And on this program, what we peddle is a...
I feel like it's education that we're peddling.
Well, it's education.
So that people can make the right decisions.
I think the attempt is transparency and trust.
Mm.
So that you can either cross-reference with somebody else. What I want you to be is successful, okay? If that's with our firm, it's fantastic, right? Because we win with you. And that's the way we're designed. I can't say fee only because we do have an insurance brokerage that in many cases, if you buy life insurance through our firm, there's a commission associated with it. We'll tell you what it is. It's fully transparent. You're aware of it. So you can know whether or not that's influencing our recommendation. But when it comes to the investments, there's no commissions associated with the investments.
Right.
Not when we're doing money management. So we're paid as a percentage of what we're managing with our clients. Yes, the fee varies. And if you're wondering what the fee is, I'm going to tell you. Why don't you first ask what you get?
That's a really good question because everyone tends to focus on, well, just tell me the fee.
What's it cost, right? It's like, well, what are you paying for?
Are you ordering a ribeye or are you getting the, you know, the side
spam.
Salad? Yeah, the spam, yeah.
So exactly. They're not the same thing and you got to know what you're ordering. So we're not going to delve into that on the show today, but I'm going to tell you that's the point, right? And so I'll come right out and tell our listeners, you guys are smart. You can figure this out. Right? Like it says in our little credits and so forth, the beginning and the end. Okay, well, this is not necessarily the opinions of this statement. It's because this is our show. We get to have our show. It represents our firm, not the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
So it's our opinions. And that's why I'm careful about when we give advice. It's if it's generic advice, great, but specifics, no. That's why you come see a pro directly for your circumstance.
Yeah.
You're not all cookie cutter out there.
No. It seems like every single financial situation is slightly different or drastically different than the last. And so you have to look at this on a case-by-case basis.
You do. And let me tell you something. If you've got a great relationship with an advisor in town, I'm cool with that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I really am. I know a lot of the practitioners in town, and there's great advisors.
Right.
Right? And I think that their motivations are pretty pure, too. Like, I think we have a overall, and I can't say who would not fit this mold, but I think most people do. And I think largely the industry does pretty well. There's just a few bad apples that, as you know, it just ruins it for everybody. But anyway, so the advice remains, be patient and bring in a ringer if you need help.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to remind you, our job is not to outsmart the markets. Now, we're going to attempt to do that where we can using the resources that we have at our disposal. But I can't compete against a high-frequency trader directly on Wall Street that's got a whole different level of access. So we're not going to play the game to beat them. We're going to play the game to work for you or for our client in general, right? You know, you is the air quotes, work for our individual customers. And we're going to just try to make smart stewardship level decisions.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't make the market do something, right? It sucks when the markets are down like this today. But you cannot conjure performance out of the markets by gritting your teeth. You cannot out-research irrationality.
Right. Right? The only way
that's a quote to remember forever. Like write that down somewhere and put it on the internet. You can't out-research irrationality.
And you don't have a crystal ball. You weren't able to look into it last night and say,
"I have a crystal ball. It doesn't do crap."
Right.
You look at it; it's just empty. And like it's, granted, there's no voodoo. You know, we haven't sold our soul to the devil to predict the future. And do I mean, maybe you could do that, but I wouldn't do it anyway.
Isn't there a Charlie Daniels song about that somewhere?
There's a fiddle of gold somewhere, right?
Yeah.
But let me tell you, I'd lose that bet. Because I don't think I'm better than anybody. It's one of my favorite songs ever, by the way. Yeah, if 2020 brought one tragedy to us that is official, it was the loss of Charlie Daniels. I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm.
Rest in peace. So there you have it on the first of, I needed to rant about the markets day. I needed to get this out of my system.
Do you feel better?
No.
Darn.
I know. Right? No.
At least you're honest.
I don't. This is not a fun experience.
No.
But I wish we could give some context. We were talking about it this break. So the markets are lousy. So people are like, I better go buy gold.
I hear that all the time.
And go, just so you know, gold was about, it got up to just around almost $1,800 an ounce back in 2012. And guess where it is today? Just over $1,700 an ounce. So 10 years later, gold is just now getting to the price it was 10 years ago.
What about the S&P over 10 years? I want a side-by-side. So gold basically flat over the last 10 years. Let's trace the S&P 500 back 10 years.
You know what? I'll just do it. So let's say
we're
going back to, 10 years, we're going back to, let's go to June. Or we want to do
somewhere in September of 2012.
Okay, so I'm pretty close right there.
Sure.
And let me do a comparison of, I don't want, so I got to come up with the closest thing to.
So we're comparing gold over 10 years to the S&P over 10 years.
And I don't have a way to do gold the metal, so I'm going to use an ETF as a proxy. We'll use GLD, which is a pretty decent proxy.
Mm-hmm.
Over that period, the S&P 500 has increased in value 185.79%. And this is going back to let me plug this in. We'll do September 9.
No, we're getting
13,
we're getting real technical
2012.
Now. I like it.
2012.
I like it.
And apply. So if we do that, what we're seeing is the S&P 500 index has gained 189.81%, and gold has gained -0.44%.
There it is.
So it's totally flat for the last 10 years versus the S&P 500, even falling 4% plus today, is up almost 200%.
I appreciate you taking the time to put that number out there because I've heard it from people, right? Where they're like, you know, I'm scared.
Right.
And I'm just going to bail on
right.
everything, and I'm just going to go give my...
Let's go back to 2002, which I don't even know if the GLD goes back that far, but let's try it and see. No, it starts in 2004, so we're going to have to...
Let's take it there.
So we'll have to do that. We're going to say 2004, and plug that puppy in there and see what we got. Still didn't exist yet, so we'll have to modify that too. Looks like we're gonna go to 2005. That's pretty close. It looks like
sure.
It started in November of 2004. So 2005 to present, that is what, 17 years?
Mm-hmm.
And now the interesting thing is over 17 years, gold is up 290.73%, S&P up 244.51. So gold has outperformed over 17 years.
Okay. But over the last 10,
but over the past
not
10,
even
it's,
close.
It's not even close. And this is the issue, is that gold isn't this mystery inflation hedge. What it is a non-correlated asset that does its own thing a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so people get the impression, now it's clearly gone up over time, and it has hedged against inflation. But gold has become its own market in the last 10 years.
What do you think we can attribute that to?
Just a lot more sophisticated ways to access the markets.
Sure.
I mean, we've had this explosion of technology in the past 15 years that has radically altered the way investors can access things.
And a lot of new investors, too. If you look at the numbers, it's like
the
do-it-yourself new investor, that statistic has gone through the roof.
Yeah, look at
the Robinhood
investor, right?
Yeah.
I mean, these aren't even investors anymore. These are people that
speculators.
Can get on their phone with an app and play around and basically legally gamble in the stock market.
Sure.
So, okay, with that, what was our summary of the section? Yeah, good. They're playing the music so we can go to break. Markets are changing, which means we as investors need to be adaptive.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about that, but not until we finish this important break. Stick around. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
Yeah, True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang. Welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, where all of the sky is falling.
Oh, no. Get your umbrella. Oh, wait.
Right? Oh, wait. There's another example of what we want to talk about for this next segment, and that is the proliferation of hyperbolic language.
I've seen it, David.
Translation.
I've seen it.
We hear more and more and more stupid, exaggerated statements.
It's almost to the point to where you can't even listen to it because you don't know what's true and what's not.
Well, I don't even know how to gauge it anymore, because what people do is they take these terms that don't, they're completely subjective in nature. Like, mm-hmm. market crashes. And you're like, so it's down 2%. Okay, 2%'s no fun. Like, even today, no fun. And what's a crash anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Market plummets. Okay, well, today, market, maybe you could say plummets. When it drops 4%, you're like,
yeah.
This statistically is like one in 300 kind of day. Right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, we haven't had a trading day like this. We get like one or two a year this bad. Or maybe one or two every few years this bad.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you go, oh, man. All right, so plummet might be the right word. But when the stocks plummet by, you know, 100 points, and you go, 100 points? That's like 0.3%. Right? And it's just...
They're just trying to get you to click on it.
Yeah, it's clickbait. It's marketing jargon. It's fear tactics. What it is it's nauseating.
Well, and half the time they're
There's
trying to sell you on their idea. Like, you click on it. Hey, market's plummeting. It's down 0.5%. But here, if you just do this, we'll
Your
sell you this.
Market skyrocket by, again, 0.5%. And you just think, well, what does skyrocket mean?
I mean, even if the markets were to go up 5% in a day, right? Year to date, it's like, well,
still be down.
we're still down.
Right. Well, and here's the really frustrating part. Markets collapse by 5%. Next day, markets rocket higher by 5%. I have news for you. The markets are still lower than they were the day before yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you fall 5%, it takes more than 5% to make up for the loss.
I guarantee you someone just heard that and said, wait a minute, I didn't hear him right.
No,
and they're scratching
follow
their head.
This math. You have $100 and you lose 5%.
Here we go. This is
now
where it gets good.
Now you have $95. You make 5%, right? And
mm-hmm.
5% of 95 isn't $5.
Right.
It's like $4.90.
Mm-hmm.
So you're still less than you started. You need to make more on a percentage basis than what you fell in order to recover that. The easy math is to say I had $100 and I lost half of it. So 50% loss. I make 50% return tomorrow. How much money do I have? $75, right? 50%
right.
return on $50 is half again more.
So you're still down,
so I'm still 25%.
Yeah.
Like, that's the problem. Is you don't, if you lose 50%, you need 100%. You got to double it to get back to where you started.
I feel like people use that to manipulate the numbers all the time.
Well, I feel like people just miss the context of numbers all the time. And, you know, let's not thrash on statistics. They're super useful. You just need to know what they mean.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the joke has been for years, right? There's three kinds of lies in the world, right? There's regular lies. There's damn lies. And there's statistics. Right? And you go, well, this is what we mean, right? And so anymore, I feel like that's the world that we live in the media is like, well, there's headlines, there's damn headlines, and there's clickbait, which might just be headlines, right? That's just where it's at.
Mm-hmm.
I had this conversation with some buddies over the weekend. We kind of lamented about the idea that a lot of, and mainstream media gets this, it's too lumpy, right? That category isn't fair. So let me try to define it. The mainstream media, I'm going to say, is nationwide distributed media with very, very highly concentrated ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Like a billionaire owns it.
Yeah.
And the billionaire may have an axe to grind. And I go, well, now you have a handful of media sources with a billionaire boss with an axe to grind that will start to curate the news. And the other is you have a very small group of people that actually control the editorial content within those organizations.
Right.
And if they all have the same ideological mindset, then you can start to coalesce around a narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And we've all heard this before. This isn't conspiracy theory stuff either, by the way. This is just way it operates.
Right.
Right. And that's not like a shot. It's just an acknowledgement of you get a bunch of like-minded people in a small group that's concentrated, then you're going to get that kind of output, right? Because there's going to be a lot of agreement.
Yeah.
So anyway, the frustration is you just get this sort of clickbaity stuff going on, and it makes the job of the financial professional a lot harder.
Right, because you're having to fight someone's preconceived notions.
Or I'm now having to fight the YouTube research warrior.
Mm-hmm.
That says, "Well, I saw this video. Check it out." It's like, it's an hour long, right? I can't just spend an hour weeding through somebody else's opinions to find out where they're not grounded in, facts or relevant or useful stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Please don't send me your YouTube videos about somebody predicting the end of the world. I have really, really. If you think the end of the world is coming, you want to know why I don't care.
Because we're screwed either way.
Yes.
Short answer.
The short answer is there's this totally pragmatic, practical, matter-of-fact way to address if the end of the world came.
So it's what are you going to do about it? Are you actually going to act on it?
Well, there's no investing around the end of the world. There's no special trade that you can do. Buying gold doesn't fix the end of the world.
Mm-mm.
Right? Buying bonds or putting it in a margin account or cash is meaningless in the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Bitcoin is meaningless in the end of the world.
Oh man, now you fired up the Bitcoin people. They're it's worth it all. But
Bitcoin's got its own problems, right? The fact that the cost of energy is starting to exceed the cost of what it takes to mine the Bitcoin. And it's too expensive to mine it. So it's starting to become a problem.
Well, and Bitcoin has actually kind of become pretty highly correlated to the market,
risk on, risk off.
That wasn't really, I think, its intent. I don't think its nature was to be.
Interest rates and Bitcoin drops.
It should be the other way around.
Well, unless it's an inflation hedge, right? It's we're not going to have inflation, so Bitcoin drops.
Mm-hmm.
So it's what is it? Is it risk on? Is it risk off? Is inflation hedge? Isn't it? What it is highly correlated markets right now. And it seems to be a risk on, risk off trade.
Bitcoin's still trying to figure out what it wants to be.
Me too.
What do you want to be when you grow up, Bitcoin?
It's a fine question, isn't it? Come on, Bitcoin. Talk. Share.
Yeah. Tell us what you really want.
Open up your feelings, Bitcoin. tell me about your childhood.
That's a rough childhood, too.
Exactly.
When you regulations? No, no.
I remember back when it was just Raspberry Pis mining me for fun. And now there's massive, GPU farms. Anyway.
We really got in the weeds there for a second.
Look out. So I'm not even sure how we provide value to our investors today other than to suggest... Let me get back to home base of the practical thing.
It goes back to...
It was the end of the world trade, right? Is it really practical?
I want to go back to what you said earlier in the show.
Please
you said
do.
Something that was really important, and I think it's kind of the theme here today. You said you got to have patience.
Yeah.
That's really what this conversation comes down to in my mind.
You have to know what your principles are as an investor,
mm-hmm.
and you have to decide,
are you a trader
or am I trading?
Yeah. Right? Are you a trader?
Okay. Now, can the two exist simultaneously? Can you be an investor and trader at the same time?
Oh, I want to answer this, David.
Well, I'll let you, Matt. After our last break.
Oh, don't do that to me.
I'm totally going to do it. So Matt will bring us back, and you want to talk about investing trading?
Yeah,
can you wear two hats?
Ooh.
Oh, that and a little bit more, but first this important message. Stick around. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, where we're wearing two hats in this last segment. Matt, what am I talking about?
Well, we kind of left the listeners off on this question that you had of, can you be a trader and an investor? And I said, let me answer that one. And you said, no, Matt, we have to take profit breaks. But now we're back, and I'm ready to answer your question, David.
Right.
Okay. And my answer to you is, yes, you can do both.
Okay.
And here's why. So I'm going to quote Justin. He's not here with us, but he's one of our advisors. And I love this example, and I use it all the time. He talked about different buckets. And he said, you know, say you've got, I'm just going to throw out a number. Say you got $100,000. You can do, I'm just going to make it real simple. Imagine three different buckets. You've got your short-term bucket, your long-term bucket, and kind of that middle-of-the-road bucket. Mm-hmm. So you might approach this from the standpoint of saying, well, I'm going to take maybe a third of my money and put it in this bucket where I want access to my money right now. And so your risk there is lower, and you're going to kind of leave it in a cash-like account. And then you've got maybe another bucket where you're targeting an income stream, right?
Right.
And so you've got some money invested that way. Maybe you split that other bucket into two different buckets and you say, here's my long-term hold. This is where I'm going to invest it, plan not to touch it, make it higher risk. And with this other bucket, we're going to be a trader. And this is where, this is money I might be able to afford to lose.
Mm-hmm.
This is where I'm going to bring in some speculation into the account. And you target some stuff that you have conviction towards. So you can trade on that amount. You're not trading and betting on the whole farm, but you're using some speculation on a fraction, maybe a quarter of the account. So you can do it. You can trade and speculate.
And here's where I'm going to expand even further.
Ooh.
I'm going to let you in on a little glimpse at what we like to do in our practice, right? Which is, when it comes to money management, we modify position sizes. Okay, so the idea is, it's not an all or nothing now.
Mm-hmm.
So we may take a position in something. I'm going to use a real position in our portfolio, not a recommendation, but I want to give you a real life example. We own Costco, okay?
Yep.
And there's a company that pretty much every advisor in the office, we all like it. It screens well in almost every way that we look at it, from management to the way they deal with cash to how much customers seem to like them to the fact that they were allowed to stay open in the pandemic. You know, lots of reasons that we like Costco. We think it has an interesting moat around it because a lot of the stuff they sell is big and doesn't ship well, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they can get trucked into a warehouse, but people still go to pick it up. So it's an interesting business to us that so we like it as an investment. It doesn't, again, not a recommendation when I share this, just some background on this thing. But we don't like it the same all the time, meaning maybe when we have sleeve, but maybe we have 12 positions in a portfolio at the time, and it ranges anywhere from as high as 15 to as few as 8. So we've got 12, right? That'd be a little less than 10% in each position, but maybe we still have a 10%. If everything was created equal, right, they'd all be about, you couldn't put 10% in everything. You'd be 120% invested. So unless you have leverage, which we are not using in this model, you're going to have less than 10% weightings. But if we really liked Costco, we might own 10 or 12% of the portfolio in just Costco, because that is our way to overweight that position. However, if we felt that it was particularly, like the price had run up a lot, we could sell back to 10 or even 9%, still own it, trade part of it, and then we can always come back later and repurchase more if we want to. And what we did was, it's, we didn't really let go of the tree branch, did we?
No.
Right? You know, we maybe
just
had two hands and now we have one hand, right? But we didn't let go.
You harvested some of the fruit and kept the tree.
Right. And that is part of tactics, right? Mm-hmm. So remember that in investing, there's all this different language, but your strategy is part of the long-term way you're going to approach problem solving. Your tactics can be a little bit more short-term in nature. And then if you want to get into, there's three kinds of major portfolio management strategies. One of them is strategic, where you sort of set it and forget it.
Mm-hmm.
Tactical, which has more active engagement and trying to proactively position for where the markets are shifting. And then dynamic, which is you're actively moving in and out, sometimes completely in or out of positions. That's like, I'm going to own Costco today and not tomorrow, and then I'll own it the day after again. Okay, now you're trading when you get into dynamic. Those are still a little bit sloppy in terms of descriptive terms because they are a little bit subjective. Like, some person may use strategy where somebody else is calling it tactics,
mm-hmm.
right? They're not, it's not well defined, and the industry sort of does that a lot because remember, we use the financial industry is going to use flowery language. They're going to use financial language to make it more expensive. And I wish that wasn't an accurate statement, but I swear it is. And then you're going to get more and more people that are coming around to the fact that you may as well just say what it is because people are smart. You got the internet. You can look all this stuff up. So then what you're figuring out is, do I like and trust and agree with what I'm purchasing? And that's kind of where we're at on this show, right? Because all along I said, what was the one thing we said, right? Be patient as an investor. And the other thing we said was cross-reference what you're being told with what you're being sold.
Right.
Okay. If you will do those two things, those alone ought to give you some additional discernment. And then the other thing is, don't be so eager to buy, right? If somebody's selling you the end of the world, don't be so eager to buy the end of the world. Pump the brakes for a second and say,
do you really want the end of the world?
Well, or what if they're wrong? What might also happen? Mm-hmm. We have to check ourselves all the time. We really feel like this, but like I'll go back to Costco. What if we're wrong? What would need to take place for Costco to really be a problem? We can kind of lay out some situations where if we saw these things happen, that would cause us concern. I think that's really wise.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is sort of like mentally rehearsing so that you recognize if something bad was to occur. You know, and in all dangerous situations, if you want a higher survivability rate, train for it. Okay, the military does it, law enforcement does it, emergency services does it, because they want better outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
So you can mentally rehearse and train
for what happens when it hits the fan.
What may happen in the future by asking yourself, what would I do if?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and today was a good sort of gut check for what would I do if? You know, this, we just gave up all of September's gains in one day. And guess what? September could still end positive for the month.
It sure can.
Totally possible. So one day it is not a trend make, and I will leave you with that thought. So as we near the wrap up, Matt, let's share with our listeners, how might they reach us if they need to get some insight personally?
Well, they could give us a call if they want to. The phone number is 541-375-0898, or you could shoot us an email at info@littlejohnfs.com. Or just stop by and say hi.
All right. So there you go. So they all work. You can text that number too, 541-375-0898. If you text it, you can get somebody and we'll get back to you. But we'd love to help, but we're out of time for today. So until next time, thanks for tuning in. This has been Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.